Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Joining us on the line now from the UK is best-selling author Victoria Hislop. She wrote The Island back in 2005, which became an international number one smash hit, published in 30 languages with over 3 million copies sold worldwide. It was set in Greece, and it actually turned into a 26-part Greek TV series. Next, we had The Return, which was set in Spain. That was in 2008. And then we had The Thread, when she returned to Greece. Well, we now have the fourth book out. It's called The Sunrise, and it's set in Cyprus, and it's already a number two Sunday Times bestseller in hardback. Now it's out in paperback. Welcome to the book show, Victoria.
Thank you. Lovely to be here. Or there.
Well, yes, exactly. It's great to have you back with us on the show. And my goodness, you've had a busy, successful time.
I have. I'm very lucky. I write stories that I'm really interested in, and it seems that other people kind of are interested too. I suppose it's because I find out a bit of history perhaps that people weren't very aware of, and kind of take the lid off it for them, so it's great.
And you're very passionate about travelling to the places that you're writing about, doing some, you know, proper research.
Absolutely. Oddly enough, with this new one, Sunrise, the main focus of the story is a city in Cyprus that's actually been sealed off with barbed wire for 40 years. So it's the first time I've written the very specific place that I'm writing about is somewhere that I've never been. So I've travelled to every inch of Cyprus, but not the specific town that I've written about, because I'm simply not allowed to go inside the barbed wire myself. So it's unusual.
It's strange that places like that still exist, especially in Europe.
Absolutely. I think it's completely unique in that, you know, it's a city where 40,000 people lived, and they left literally within a few hours when Cyprus was invaded by Turkey in August 1974, and they've never been allowed back. So what's extraordinary is that their possessions are still in the city is called Famagusta, and the particular area is Varosha. So all those people who fled, you know, thinking that the situation would be resolved, have then found that it's been impossible to return to their homes. And there's nowhere else like it in Europe. There's no other ghost city of that scale or size.
And all their possessions are still there in their houses?
Well, one imagines so. I mean, there was a lot of looting that went on when the army arrived, when they'd already fled. But things like photograph albums and clothes and shoes and record collections and all that kind of personal stuff, I imagine it's still there in their wardrobes, in their, you know, kitchen drawers, hidden away, perhaps under floorboards. But yeah, there are personal possessions there on a huge scale. So it did fascinate me when I began to imagine what that felt like.
And before this happened, this conflict happened in 1972, the Greeks and Turkish Cypriots lived together in harmony, didn't they?
Well, they did. I mean, there were occasional clashes between small groups of people. And that had been going on right back into the 50s. But on the whole, they lived very peaceably. And there were sort of mixed villages and mixed towns. And Famagusta itself was an example of, you know, a place where people lived together. And it was really when, you know, it's always when politics get involved. That's when things sort of go wrong. And first of all, there was an army coup in July 1974, when some Greek army basically helped stage a coup, which deposed the president of Cyprus. So that was the kind of catalyst, really, for then what happened next, which was the full-scale invasion by the Turkish army.
Yeah.
So one thing led to another, as always happens in history. And, you know, it basically destroyed what I think was probably something close to a paradise in Cyprus. So it's very sad, and it affected the lives of every single person on Cyprus. And many of them, as I say, have never, not just not been able to return to Famagusta, but to the other cities that they lived. And many of them became refugees.
Yes.
So, yeah, it was I'd say a catastrophe.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in your book, In the Sunrise, there is a hotel that features prominently.
Absolutely. I've set the whole thing in one sort of inner city, but specifically within inside this huge luxury hotel. Because the thing about Famagusta before 1974 was that it was one of the sort of primary resorts in the whole of the Mediterranean. It was a most amazing beach, most amazing blue, clean, lovely sea. And there was a string of hotels along the seafront there that were sort of among the best in Europe. And the one that I'd staged the whole situation of the book was a sort of imaginary place. And I've made it, probably exaggerated the luxury and the sort of quality of the fixtures and fittings and the food, and I've turned it into this sort of supremely fantastic, super luxury hotel. And what happens is when the invasion takes place and the 40,000 people in this city all flee, I have two families that simply cannot leave for their own reasons, and they end up hiding inside this enormous kind of fantastic environment that I've created.
Wow.
And it's kind of where the luxurious hotel sort of turns into a prison, because they're in hiding. It's very dangerous for them to be there, but of course they have many things that they've never experienced before. There's a Greek Cypriot family and a Turkish Cypriot family from quite, you know, they're ordinary people. They would never in a billion years have ever had the opportunity to go inside such a place as the Sunrise Hotel. So it's all that, you know, the way they discover is this sort of luxury that lies inside those walls. And they survive there for some time.
And so, through your research into what happened in the early 70s in Cyprus, have you begun to sort of understand a lot more about it, why it happened and how people are still affected by it today?
Oh, very much so. I mean, the thing about, in effect, it was a civil war situation of a kind, because it was a whole country that was sort of split into two. And these things have repercussions for decades afterwards. They're never like, well, as any war has a huge set of repercussions for people that last well after the end of the war. But in Cyprus, yes, absolutely. I mean, the UK, for example, is full of Cypriots from both sides, Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots, who had to leave very suddenly 40 years ago. And it affects their lives even until today. You know, every day I think many of them wake up and if they went through that, they probably remember it. And they perhaps feel, you know, that they're not in the right place, because they were forced to leave their homes. I think that has a very profound effect on people.
Sure.
And not only on the people that it happened to, but even on children who were then unborn, you know, the generations that came afterwards grow up with this sense of having been displaced from the place of their sort of heritage, from their roots, from their culture. So it has an enormous, what I call a tail. There's the actual events that take place, and then this long, kind of tale that follows afterwards.
Yeah. And what is what's the reality of it all being resolved, do you think? What needs to happen for everybody to go back and live together again?
Interestingly, as ever, the situation lies with the politicians. Because, again, there's a situation now where I think the ordinary people, the Greek Cypriot in the street and your Turkish Cypriot in the street in Cyprus, would dearly love to have an island that's reunified. I mean, they did have an opportunity. There was a referendum a few years ago, and the decision effectively came not to reunify at that point with the conditions that were imposed. But I think as time has moved on, there's even greater a desire. Having said that, there are these two presidents now, the president of the Turkish Cypriots in the north and the Greek Cypriots in the south. And last week, these two men went on a very symbolic walk around the city of Nicosia, which is the last divided capital, I think, in the world. It still has a line down the middle, a bit like we used to have with Berlin. And the two presidents from the two sides went across the sort of border into the other one side and drank coffee and ate cake and kind of showed a symbolic commitment to reunifying the island. So there's always hope. There's always, always hope that there'll be a resolution.
Yeah, because it has affected the tourist trade and also people, Brits or people from other parts of Europe, buying property in Cyprus. You know, it has sadly put people off, hasn't it?
I think it has. There have been, some examples perhaps of where somebody has bought in the north, and in fact they've discovered that the deeds to the place that they've bought didn't belong to the person who they bought the house from. So that's obviously extremely problematic if you've spent all your life savings on a property and discover it's not yours.
Yes.
On tourism, I mean, I think tourism has always been quite healthy in the south on the Greek Cypriot side, because something that the Cypriots did very amazingly fast, because Cypriots are extraordinarily resilient, that they sort of they built lots of new places. Having lost places in the north, they then built lots of very fine hotels in the south. So they have a reasonably good, and as in the south of Spain, they have this amazing climate. About 9 months of the year, you can go to Cyprus and have sort of the feeling of the sunshine on your face, which is something that certainly many Brits really appreciate.
Definitely.
So, yeah, for sure. It still has many tourists going there.
And I have to ask you, because all of your books have been such a success, do you feel a certain amount of pressure with each one?
I do and I don't. I mean, the only pressure is not to disappoint your readers, because if they've enjoyed previous books, you're sort of giving them something, you're sort of holding out the new story, and, they are all in a similar genre, in that I go back and perhaps find a piece of history that I think has been kind of lost or a little bit forgotten, and show more about what's behind it now. And you never want to disappoint your readers. But when I start researching and start kind of mapping out my story, I'm kind of doing it principally because I'm obsessed with it and I'm really interested in it myself.
Yes.
So I always hope that therefore they will feel the same as me, about, I think most of my readers, probably 80% of my readers, will have some recollection of the events of 1974. I'm just roughly calculating that lots of my readers are over 50. And I only say that because of the people who come to my events. That's the only way I ever know who my readers are. So that they, like me, will have some dim recollection that something big happened in Cyprus at that time.
Yes.
And that, like me, before I started researching it, they'll probably have vaguely thought, oh, well, I expect it got resolved. But as I did, when I realised that there was this huge ghost town, I mean, literally with hundreds of derelict homes and shops and hotels and so on, that they, like me, will go, God, that's absolutely extraordinary. What happened, you know? So I'm kind of taking them into a situation that I myself found utterly intriguing.
Yes.
And I hope that if they are drawn in to the story as I was, they'll go, wow, this is absolutely, you know, because really the things that the backdrop of all my books is totally real, you know, absolutely true. So it's almost like sharing this revelation that I had with the reader. And that's always my hope. And, you know, one can only do one's best.
Yes.
With telling stories.
And you obviously enjoy what you do so much.
Yes, hugely. Absolutely, enormously. I feel very lucky to do what I do. Extremely. As I think, you know, I really feel that the ideal is for people to enjoy their work, whatever it is.
Yes.
Because we, all of us, spend most of our waking hours doing this thing called a job. And I hope that most people get some pleasure out of what they do.
Yes, it helps, doesn't it?
Yes, it certainly does.
So do you know what's next for you, or where you're going to set the next book, at least?
Well, the next project is a book of short stories. So those will be set in different places in Greece. So that's my next and current project.
Oh, lovely. So I understand you're spending a lot of time in Greece. Can I ask you whereabouts?
Most of the time when I'm in Greece, I'm in Crete, which is the southernmost bit of Europe, actually. And again, a little bit like Cyprus, I suppose, in some ways. It's a place that you can go all through the year for, you know, walking or culture, or summer, lots of sunshine.
Yes.
And I do lots of writing there. I find it very inspiring place to be.
Lovely.
So yes, I'm lucky. Writers aren't necessarily stuck in the same office all the time, so I know that's a great privilege.
Yes, definitely. Well, if people want more information about you and all of your books, they can have a look on your website. It's victoriahislop.com. And of course, they can get a copy of your latest book that we've been chatting about today. It's called The Sunrise. Victoria, thank you so much for joining us.
That's a great pleasure. Thank you for having me.